You are listening to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. What have been the effects of Vietnam's invasion of Cambodia in 1979 and its overthrowing of the genocidal Khmer Rouge government? Our contributing host, Doug Becker, explores.
I'm Doug Becker. In 1979, Vietnam invaded Cambodia and overthrew the Khmer Rouge government. This government had committed genocide since its seizure of power in 1975. Vietnam's motivations have been asserted in a wide range of explanations, from the advancement of communism based on Marxist-Leninist ideology to humanitarian interests in protecting Vietnamese populations targeted by the Khmer Rouge in their genocide, to a strategic interest in expanding Vietnamese power in the region. In a new book entitled Vietnam Strategic Thinking During the Third Indochina War, Kosal Poth examines this decision and its impact. Professor Poth is assistant professor of political science at Brooklyn College, and he's joined us for this conversation. So first, Professor Poth, what conditions in Cambodia led to Vietnam's decision to invade? What was going on in Cambodia that would compel an invasion?
It's a long story. I'm going to give you a brief history of the conflict between the Cambodian communists and the Vietnamese communists. Going way back to 1930, the Communist Party of Indochina was to 1930. Then in 1951, the Communist Party of Indochina was divided into three parties, one party for each country. So you have the Vietnamese Communist Party for Vietnam, the Cambodian Communist Party for Cambodia, and the other one for Laos. So each Communist Party was kind of a triple alliance against the French colonialists. So I'm not going to delve into detail, but I'm going to fast forward to the conflict. So what happened in 1954, so this is following the independent, Cambodia gained independence from France in 1953. So what to be done after that? So you have several factions in Cambodia. You have Sihanouk regimes, the Songkhum Rietnyom government, which is very popular, in control and supported by the French. And so after the Paris Peace Conference in 1954, the communists, the Khmer communists, Cambodian communists, were not part of the conference. Unlike the Vietnamese, unlike the Laotian Communist Party, they were part of the conference. So the Khmer Communists were not invited to be part of the conference. Instead, the Sihanouk regime was part of the conference. And so in 1955, the conference decided that the Sihanouk Songkhum Rietnyom will organize a party, a general election. All parties in conflict were invited to be part of the election. But the Khmer Communists knew very well that they would not be able to win the election under Sihanouk repressions and also with the support from France. So what they decided to do is that they're going to split the party. They're going into hiding. So it's about 2,000 of 3,500 strong decided to go to North Vietnam with the communists, the retreating communists. Some decided to stay behind and continue the kind of secret cell, communist cell, within the Sihanouk control regime. So in 1961, this is really after years of repressions by the Sihanouk regime, the Khmer Communists was on the retreat. So they were weakened tremendously. They were repressed and they were kind of disorganized, disintegrated into small cells, some in Phnom Penh and some in the countryside in provinces, some in the jungle. But one particular cell, the Phnom Penh cell, was controlled by the communists from France, including Solot Saw or Pol Pot, and his French, the returned students from France, including Ing Seri, Khieu Samphan, and Son Sen. So these later on became the leader of the Democratic Cambodia or the Khmer Rouge leaders. Mm-hmm. So this cell grew very strong. They hijacked the Communist Party. For some reason, still a mystery, in 1962, the general secretary of the Khmer Communist Party disappeared. Thu Samut disappeared. And there's reports that he might have been kidnapped and killed by Pol Pot himself. So Pol Pot usurped the power, became the General Secretary of the Khmer Communist Party in 1962. And 63, he began to plan for the Communist Party to fight back against the Sangkum Rinnayum run by Sihanouk, and also to become a major party to the future vision of the country. So what happened, we got to go back to what was going on in Vietnam, right? So the Tet Offensive in 1968. So the main story is that basically this is really the Vietnamese communist surprise attacks against the United States across South Vietnam, right? So this is sort of the what we know in the United States, kind of the Vietnam War. But there's a story to that that related to Cambodia. Because at that time, Sihanouk regime decided to offer support to the Vietnamese communists, because he was not comfortable enough with the United States, and he was concerned about the coup d'etat. He concerned about the American plot to assassinate him. So what he saw in South Vietnam was not something that he would like to see happen to himself. So basically, he see that the end of the Vietnam War would turn out to be victorious for the Vietnamese communists. So therefore, he, under this cloak of neutrality, the Sihanouk regime and his military leader, including Lon Nol, decided to offer support, right, to the Vietnamese communists against the United States, hoping that by the end of the war, he will make peace with the Vietnamese, the victorious Vietnamese communists, to resolve the outstanding border dispute between the two countries. So what happened to the Khmer communists? What happened to Pol Pot? This is the beginning of Pol Pot grievances and grudge toward the Vietnamese communists. They felt betrayed that the Vietnamese communists did not fully support them against the Sihanouk, and they decided to sleep with Sihanouk. And so from the very beginning, Pol Pot never trusted the Vietnamese communists to begin with. In the 1960s. So in 1966, when he went to see Mao Zedong in China, he began to chart a different course for the Communist Party of Cambodia with him at the helm. So here you have a sort of Maoist brand of Khmer communism and the sort of the Vietnamese brand of communism, like more pro-Soviet Union. And so that was the beginning of the conflict between the Khmer communists and the Vietnamese communists. So by 1973, the conflict turned to be very serious. The Cambodian communists were not part of the January 1973 Paris Peace Conference. And so they felt, Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge leader felt betrayed by the Paris Peace Agreement. The Vietnamese decided to end the war, negotiate the war, and did not allow Cambodia to be part of the negotiation. So as a result, the Nixon administration bombed Cambodia, bombed the communists right after the Paris Peace Conference in 1973. So as a result, the Vietnamese felt that they had to come and talk to to the Khmer leadership. So in September 1974, this is before, just 1 year before both countries became victorious and came to power, they sent a high delegation to the Cambodians' jungle to meet the Khmer leader. And the Khmer leader gave the Vietnamese delegation a cold reception. And one of the major conflicts that I saw in the sort of secret memo report back then is that the Pol Pot Khmer Rouge were very, very upset about the outcome of the Paris Peace Agreement in 1973, that the Vietnamese betrayed them because of that negotiation, because of that Paris Peace Conference. The Nixon administration decided to bomb Cambodia, and a lot of communists were killed, a lot of the sanctuary were destroyed. And so that's the major break. And the Khmer Rouge communists began to purge all Khmer communists who were trained by the Vietnamese, trained by the North Vietnamese. This is well before the genocide that took place in Cambodia. This is well before They came to power in April 1975. So that is a one major conflict, historical conflict that between the two Communist Party. So, but the other part of the conflict that played such an important role that triggered the Vietnamese Communists to attack, to invade Cambodia, it began with a kind of irredentist nationalism. So when the Khmer Rouge came to power in Cambodia in 1975, April 75, the next month in May 1975, they began an assault to take over islands, some of the islands in the Gulf of Thailand from the Vietnamese control, and began to, this is the beginning of the Khmer Rouge assault attack on Vietnam. The plan is to take over lost territory from the Vietnamese, right? So territory is central, was also central to the Khmer Rouge's initiation of attack. So to be clear, the Khmer Rouge attacked the Vietnamese first, and they thought they could win the war, at least to take over a large section of the territory, and then began the negotiation. But the Vietnamese responded with massive attack and retake all those islands and territory quickly after the Khmer Rouge assault. So the Khmer Rouge failed to do that, but they did not stop. They continued to attack into Vietnam. So this is the beginning of the conflict. From the Vietnamese perspective, they were puzzled why the Khmer Rouge, much weaker than the Vietnamese Communist Party and the military, and why they decide to attack Vietnam first. And so this was a puzzle. And the only logical explanation from the Vietnamese perspective was that it must be Beijing behind them. Beijing supported the Khmer Rouge, and that's why the Khmer Rouge had the province to attack Vietnam. And so between 1975, this is a critical period, between 1975 and 1977, the Vietnamese were starting the situation, right? So they decided not to invade Cambodia back then. They could have done so, but they thought that they need to do one thing before they decide to invade Cambodia, and that is to make sure that the Soviet Union was fully behind them, right? So in June 1978, they signed a military pact with the Soviet Union, and then they were certain that the Soviet Union offered full support for the military campaign against the Khmer Rouge to change the regime in Phnom Penh and rebuild a new pro-Hanoi regime in Cambodia, and then get it off the Chinese influence altogether. So that is the major cause of the invasion.
Okay, so this is interesting in that this is a conflict that frequently gets described in our field of international relations as an element of the so-called strategic triangle, because you've got the Chinese-backed Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, and you've got the Soviet-backed Vietnamese, and then, of course, the U.S. having to make a decision on whether or not they can open a rift between China and the Soviet Union. But what you're describing is that the conflict itself was driven, is it fair to say, more by personality or, you know, personal decisions about the leadership of the subsequent communist parties, and in particular, the Vietnamese communist government's refusal to fully back Pol Pot and instead support his adversaries or potential adversaries. So Pol Pot seeking out Chinese support, and that ultimately is what's driving this conflict, is this sort of battle, you know, for the leadership within the party? Or are there also some strategic interests or broader sort of big game China versus the Soviet Union sort of issues that are also driving this?
So in my book, I make two central arguments. First, unlike most existing study, which attributed Vietnam's decision to invade Cambodia in December 1978 to kind of Vietnamese political elites, paranoia, imperial ambition over, you know, China. So this is the main argument written by previous scholars, right? So it's kind of Vietnamese political elites, paranoia. They have this sort of imperial design over Cambodia. And a lot of Cambodians think that too. And the Khmer Rouge in particular thinks that the Vietnamese always have this imperial design over Cambodia. start with the Communist Party of Indochina, so they can control Cambodia and Laos, kind of as two little brother, and the Vietnamese will lead the pack, right? Then the other argument would be sort of Marxist-Leninist ideology, that this is really the conflict between the sort of Pol Pot Maoist brand against the pro-Soviet the Vietnamese communists, right? So the brothers in conflict, two red brothers in conflict. My argument is that Hanoi's decision to invade Cambodia, India, some might say, was rational. That is Hanoi's strategic move to cement and its alliance with the Soviet Union to solve domestic crisis at home and counter imminent threat posed by the Sino-Cambodian alliance. And so it's a rational action. It's a rational calculation. It's a calculated decision-making process, right? The two problems from the Vietnamese perspective in the 1970s, first, they have an economic crisis at home, right? Serious economic crisis at home. The first five-year plan after Vietnam was united failed miserably. And on top of that, they suffered this massive damage by drought and flooding in 1977, 78. And then, so on top of that, you have this a population that after 30 years war against the France and United States, there was kind of war fatigue. So the military was really in disarray at that point, right? And so the Vietnamese had to think rationally about what to do, right? The reluctant to invade Cambodia early on, as I talked about earlier, why not 1976, 1977, when the Khmer Rouge attacked them repeatedly? Why did they decide not to do then? Why did they wait until December 1978? I think this is a very important point because, again, you got to look at the domestic crisis in Vietnam. The crisis of legitimacy. The Vietnamese Communist Party is in trouble in 1978, right? So there's a lot of popular complaint about corruptions, about food crisis, all kind of things, all kind of complaints against parties members. So there is a serious socio-economic crisis at home, and then you have this sort of the Sino-Cambodian threat, right, from both sides, from the north, from the south. So those are the two major crises, major threat to Vietnam that the Vietnamese leader was thinking about. So, and the Soviet Union became the must-have a kind of solution. The Soviet can deal with both economic crisis at home, can help them with economic crisis at home, and also to deal with the Sino-Cambodian threat. And this is my argument that this is a rational calculation, right? They decide to sign a treaty, friendship treaty with the Soviet Union in June 1978 to address both economic crisis at home and the national security threat posed by the the Sino-Cambodian alliance. It is a rational calculation.
And one of the things that makes that so striking is, and in the book you certainly highlight this, that at the end of the day, what the Vietnamese had chosen to do, though they may be militarily stronger than the Cambodians, but if you bring the Chinese into the calculation, and certainly eventually the American support for the Chinese position, that suddenly Vietnam is facing, you know, potentially a much more significant amount of power against them, but against those odds, perhaps. Vietnam has had rather quite a lot of success. They end up toppling the Khmer Rouge government and dominating Cambodian politics quite directly for 10 years. And right. Then seemingly still has quite a bit of domination. First of all, how did Vietnam do that? You know, how were they so successful in their occupation? And then, yeah, I'll tell you the follow-up, which is then how has it continued even after the Vietnamese army will withdraw from Cambodia, yet their chosen successor continues to play, I think it's fair to say, the most significant role in contemporary Cambodian politics.
Why successful? Well, to be direct, the Vietnamese military was strong. I mean, they had 1 million strong as active soldiers right after after they defeated the United States. So there's an enormous amount of military power still in place. despite the fact that I said that some, you know, military personnel were released from active duty to do economic work because of the economic crisis, but it's still massive amount of firepower, right, on the part of the Communist Party of Vietnam. And I think I must stress one thing. The success of the Vietnamese Communist Party, in my view, is the ability to mobilize, right, to mobilize resources. And that is extraordinary through the First Indochina War, the Second Indochina War, and the Third Indochina War, against the French, the United States, and China. The ability to mobilize was extraordinary. So it's fair to say that the Communist Party of Vietnam and the Vietnamese state is in an extractive, resource extractive state. They were able to rally people behind the flag very quickly, using the emotion, combine the emotions and the firepower, and to defeat the Khmer very quickly. And the fact that the Khmer were so brutal against the Vietnamese, they committing war crimes and raping against the Vietnamese innocents along the border, provide emotional power, emotional power to the invasion. I think that's I can't stress enough. So that's the success of the part of the success is the ability to mobilize. Right, and also with the support from the Soviet Union, they were able to actually defeat the Khmer Rouge effectively. But I have to say that it's not all successful story. What they failed to foresee at the time, based on available documents, new documents, is that they failed to predict the Chinese invasion of northern Vietnam in February 1979 in response to the Vietnamese invasion of Camp. And they failed to predict that, and they had to withdraw a large numbers of Vietnamese troops from Cambodia to deal with the Chinese invading army in northern Vietnam. So they failed to predict that. I think it was a miscalculation. They thought that China was a paper tiger, right? They had a lot of domestic problems, and they were not able to respond militarily against the Vietnamese invasion of Cambodia. Is that part was a miscalculation. And that's only the story. If you look at the Vietnamese narrative, it was never a fail. They always had everything figured out. But in the document that I looked at, no, they did not predict that. And led to the Vietnamese failure to predict that cost enormously in terms of economic infrastructure. The Chinese invading army destroyed pretty much northern Vietnam economic infrastructures, roads, and livestock, and so on. And the other part of you allude to the success of regime change and then build a new regime that is pro-Vietnam. Yes, to an extent, from 1979 to 1989, it's fair to say that the Vietnamese was involved in all aspects of nation building, right? From building a new party, building an army, building infrastructure, the sort of the government structure from the central government, central party, all the way to the district level, right? And I described that in the book in detail. I'm not going to mention here. So the Vietnamese basically wanted to export their blueprint, right? Socialist framework model to Cambodia. So they were successful in doing that. Up until 1989, when they withdrew from Cambodia. Well, fast forwarding to Cambodia today, I would say that this is, I think, the Vietnamese look back to this Cambodia chapter with a sense of, I would say they quite disappointed that now the Hun Sen government turned to China. And despite the fact that the ruling party in Cambodia today under Prime Minister Hun Sen's leadership can never cease to say thank you to them, to the Vietnamese, for all the assistance during the decade from 1979 to 1989. But if you look at every day in Cambodia, the Vietnamese will never fail to notice rising influence of the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese government in Cambodia. So in a way, they went to Cambodia to try to end Chinese influence in Cambodia, which turned to threaten them militarily. Now, it's more like a comeback. So the history repeats itself. I think that's the main concern looking from the Hanoi perspective.
So a fascinating examination of Vietnam's interests, and in particular their strategic interests, in the decision to invade Cambodia, and certainly, as Professor Poff has highlighted, reliant on a lot of new information that's been released, and some really wonderful primary research done by Professor Poff in this book. The book is called Vietnam Strategic Thinking During the Third Indochina War. It is available if you'd like to pick it up. I would encourage you, you know, to read that. Thank you very much, Professor Poff. This has been very, very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to our guests and to you for listening. Special thanks to Artur Kaizakyan, founder of Letters from Quarantine. The Scholar's Circle team includes Doug Becker and Lillian Ng, contributing hosts, Ankine Agassian and Melissa Chiprin, managing producers, Sud Dongre, our webmaster, Tim Page and Mike Hurst, engineers and technical support. I'm Maria Armudian, and we'll see you next week.